This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
This project is an attempt to show if the property of all matter, its mass, which makes bodies resist acceleration, can instead be made to produce it. Mass has inertia, but can inertial forces produce propulsive force, mechanical effort? And in this particular investigation, can the opposition between centripetal and centrifugal forces produce torque, or rotational force? If this can be done, then the world's energy problem will be solved, because we will have perpetual motion, no less.
Thank you. Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. I'm William English, and this week's guest is Dan Wilson.
Hello.
Hello, Dan. Why are you here?
Well, you asked me to come here. And this is... people have been just listening to a soundtrack to...
Indeed.
One of your films.
So this is a new film of whose? Who's made the film?
You.
Okay. It's called It's My Own Invention, made in 2017, which is sort of a portrait of Hugh de la Cruz, who is engaged with perpetual motion in to some extent, so almost to the point of complete self-delusion.
Yeah.
And we will be talking to Hugh later, approximately 3 o'clock. We're going to phone Hugh and get him to recite a toilet poem. Does that have any relevance at all to perpetual motion?
No. You'd have to ask Hugh about this. When you mentioned that you were doing a show which is half showcasing the soundtrack to your film and half Hugh's toilet poem.
Yeah.
It was difficult to think of a link between perpetual motion and poetry about toilets.
Yeah.
But maybe there's something we're missing.
Yes. Yeah, and there have been a few strange coincidences ever since this issue was raised.
Yeah.
Namely, the place where I work, the toilet literally broke down yesterday, which is something called a Saniflow device, which apparently acts like a blender on the contents of the toilet and projects them upwards to the next floor rather than downwards into the sewer.
So it's called some strange synchronicity.
There would seem to be some. There is a degree of synchronicity. But you are Dan Wilson. You are the founder of Radionics, I think.
No, not the art of radionics. Goes back to the 1920s.
Right.
Radionics Radio, which is a project sponsored by Sound and Music, and it attempted to encode thoughts onto frequencies. And by doing that, it gives you lots of strange tunings, microtonal tunings that you can play around with.
Right.
And in fact, one of the pieces you just heard was actually a microtonal piece, which was mangled through a cassette tape. In fact, I can describe some of the processes.
Indeed, yeah. So the film is 78 minutes long, and you were responsible for the sound. You've composed some original music and pieces using your own homemade instruments. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
And you've also fed Hugh's voice through various sort of devices to create a less straightforward kind of delivery,
That's based a lot on your previous film, the portrait of Captain Maurice Seddon.
Right. Heated
gloves, which employed archive material that you possess. Lots of the archive material is on tape, and it created a particular aesthetic sonically, which I tried to continue through the Hugh film, but there exists no archive of Hugh. Still with us, Hugh.
He is, but he's another subject that I've actually got footage. I've shot footage of him over a considerable period of time, and I think the earliest footage of Hugh in the film is at least 20 years ago.
And it's contemporary to Maurice as well, so
that's right.
Overlap.
The two of them appear together briefly in the film, Hugh and Maurice, because in fact it was Maurice who introduced me to Hugh in the first place. And Hugh used to wash up for us in the dining room.
And they're both very eccentric characters, and it was a task to try and represent that in sound.
Yeah.
But there's a big kind of issue about this, which played on my mind a lot whilst doing the soundtrack, and I remember talking to you a lot about this, is that something Hugh said to you in a phone conversation on a previous Wavelength about Hugh kept saying that he approaches lots of universities and researchers for assistance with his ideas about perpetual motion. And he mentioned that he always encounters disingenuousness.
Right.
And that was a word that stuck with me. And I tried to make the soundtrack which was quite difficult, not necessarily it was very easy to make a disingenuous soundtrack that plays upon the eccentricities and wonky. It sounds like it's got one leg missing, and I suppose what you just heard did fit that description, but tried. That wasn't actually how it appeared in your film. That was slowed down by a third,
right,
and it was more of an abstract piece. Originally it was a melodic piece composed with an out of tune zither, again using microtones, which is one of my things.
Yeah,
I like to use breaking away from the equal tempered scale.
Yeah,
but you didn't want the thing is it was it mustn't be manifestly wonky.
No, because otherwise the effect is one of ridicule. In
yes,
a way.
Exactly.
The person, the figure, if the music is too comic,
yeah,
comical,
yeah,
or is disingenuous? Is
disingenuous?
That disingenuous? Yeah. Then it undermines the integrity of the subject.
Exactly, yeah. And that was one of the problems that I had. And I tried, because Hugh's got amazing ideas. We visited him. In fact, one of the next things that you'll be about to play is an exclusive recording, unused, that features a recording from Hugh's front room discussing the nature of perpetual motion. One of Hugh's ideas about perpetual motion is that he can convert the centrifugal force of a rotating disc back to the axle to create the rotation, kind of feeding back the force, the centrifugal force, which is a byproduct of rotation, to the actual motion, to create a perpetually turning wheel. And it's a really interesting idea, and it's something that has been tried a lot, but it's clever, but there is an inherent wonkiness to how he brings these things about using matchsticks and cigarette filters to demonstrate
on his desktop, basically, and rubber bands, which I think featured in part of the soundtrack. You did try and include rubber bands, I think, in the soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we ended up using all of they're not. You can't really hear them as rubber bands because I manipulated them slightly.
Right.
But having said all this about disingenuousness, though, we're doing a toilet. He's reading a toilet poem, so it's kind of actually that is quite comedic. So in theory,
yes.
So he's kind
possibly.
Of,
I haven't actually heard it yet. Okay. I mean, it remains to be seen.
It could be the profoundest thing.
It could be quite serious. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. That will be at 3 o'clock. Do you want to play? Should we play the next track?
Yeah, the next track is a recording from Hugh's front room.
Right. I mean, I must say, you were one of the few people that has actually taken his invention seriously. He does have trouble getting people to take it on board because most people just say, well, perpetual motion is impossible.
Yeah, but I'm from an arts background, so he intuited that I was, that my knowledge of engineering is strictly limited to acoustics and instrument building. So I don't think I'm... Although I can suspend disbelief and entertain ideas of free energy. I mean, I did the radionics radio itself is based on the pseudoscience of radionics, which is steeped in concepts of free energy and ether and things like that.
Right.
But so I've kind of read widely on this.
Yeah.
But I was quite shy. I mean, I thought he was, it was, I didn't speak as much as I should have,
I think you found him slightly dismissive. I think he wasn't. It's almost as though you're
in a friendly way.
In a friendly way, yeah. But it's almost as though your credentials were somehow less than he was hoping for.
Yeah, well, I couldn't quite get purchase in what he was saying a lot because he goes off in all these different directions, and I think one of the underlying implicit things in your film is that there's perpetual motion and there's also perpetual talking.
Right, yeah.
Which is what Hugh tends to do.
Well, strangely, he has been concerned with this issue for at least 10 years and it never really seems to get anywhere.
Yeah, so it's almost a feedback loop. It's like a recurring. He goes around on these recurring things. The tug of war, for instance, which is what he describes in this upcoming recording.
Does he? Should we play this then?
I should say actually, it sounds disingenuous because the microphone was placed in front of the friendly neighbourhood cat that was perched on his sofa. right. snoring very loudly.
Yeah. Okay, so this is Hugh and Cat, which wasn't actually used in the film, I don't
think. No, this is exclusive.
A tug of war between two teams. So, if both teams are applying the same amount of force but in opposite directions, neither team will move because each will cancel out the other. But if one team is applying more force, the team pulling on the rope to the right is applying more force to the team pulling on the rope to the left. The right-hand team will overcome the left-hand team and will pull the left-hand team after, start moving, and the left-hand team will be struggling, but they will find that they're being pulled along even though they're trying to move in the opposite direction. But even though they have been overcome, they're nevertheless applying counteractive force to the predominant force, which has got to be subtracted from the predominant force. So, if the stronger team is applying a force of 10 pounds, and the weaker team is applying a contrary force of 5 pounds, then the right-hand stronger team applying a force of 10 pounds will overcome the weaker team applying a force of 5 pounds. But you've got to subtract that 5 pounds that the weaker team are applying from the force applied by the stronger team. And the stronger team will then nevertheless still win, but they will only be applying a force of 5 pounds to produce a propulsive force in one direction, right? So they will be pulling the weaker team after them. Do you see that? Now, what I'm trying to do is to get that happening, but in rotation.
Thank you.
So that's something, that's a sort of an outtake in a way. I mean, it's described as Hugh and Cat.
Yes, the you could hear in the thing that preceded that piece of music was a recording from Hugh's front room with a cat snoring too loudly, I think, loudly enough to discredit what he's saying.
Right.
And I that was unused. That ended up on the snipping room floor.
Right.
And the piece of music that followed it was a potential theme that again didn't make the cut of the film.
Right.
Which tried to give some of the vibes that Hugh's got this it's a very classical outlook on mechanics. Well, you know him more than me.
I know him, but I know nothing about engineering.
But
I mean, I've
books.
Never really. You are far more up to speed with the sort of physics side of it.
But yeah, I don't know. But it seems unusual that Hugh approaches perpetual motion from the same view as people were doing 600 or 700 years ago. Athanasius Kircher and Robert Fludd were using similar technologies that Hugh has grappling with at the moment.
Yeah.
And it seems interesting that he doesn't want to bring in like solar power or some of the newer ideas that you could create a very energy efficient system by requisitioning some of the more modern solar panel type things,
right.
Wind power and kinetic energy and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's approaching it from
he's very, a bit like Morris, he's very sort of anachronistic, isn't he?
Yes.
He's very much out of time, but that's sort of his attitude. It's like he's trying to sort of bypass the modern world or something.
Yeah,
He's trying to ignore that because he's trying to retrieve something that's been overlooked in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's continuing with something which he thinks still has potential, but which most people dismiss.
Yeah.
In fact, he is easily dismissed as a sort of, I suppose, as a crank. But yeah. I mean, I suppose what I like about it is it's the way the film ends. There is a sort of an air of mystery about it. There is like some sort of for him, it's a tangible thing, but for me, it's more like a big unknown.
Yeah.
And so the film actually ends with a shot where we, having listened to him for about 40 minutes talking about this device, it pans over and just sort of goes into the trees, virtually.
It goes into the sky.
Yes.
There's an interesting thing. You mentioned the 40-minute section where he discusses his idea for 40 solid minutes. You need to stress that is actually an uncut section. And I remember when we were...
It's not quite true. To be really pedantic, it has been cut a bit. It actually was an hour long.
Oh. Wow.
But it could have been 5 hours long. Basically, he could have just carried on and on and on. And in fact, he had insisted afterwards. He did sort of say, oh, by the way, I must add this bit. And he always wants to continue adding a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. But basically, he's going around in a circle perpetually.
And that, you mentioned, I remember as we were trying to sync up the sound to that in the editing suite, there was a moment where we just realized, it became very apparent that almost we'd reached a new...
Yes.
Way of making film. It was a new sensation.
Yeah.
It was beyond absurdity. It was it breached tolerance threshold. It's an endurance piece, really, that section, I think.
Yes. I hope it is endurable. We haven't really hasn't been tried on an audience as yet. The film was submitted to this year's London Film Festival, which starts in about a week's time. But they foolishly rejected it. Turned it down. I was hoping to sort of ride on the surf of heated gloves, you know, that there would be a sort of bit of momentum which might carry it forward and so on. But this was not to be. So now the next possible screening it's been entered for Rotterdam, which isn't until next year, in fact, the beginning of next year.
Okay.
If that fails, then it will probably sink without trace.
No, that would be a tragedy. This is quite an interesting... It's a challenging film as well. It's something that's the subject and the way it's been presented is it's engaging and it's also challenging. I think it's it's perfect for a festival. Yeah.
Have you done any other soundtracks? Have you film soundtracks? I mean,
Yeah, a few, but I just can't. My memory's failed me.
All right. Well, maybe we're fast approaching the time when we're going to try and get Hugh on the phone. It has to be said he's virtually housebound these days. He's not in the greatest of health. And so what we'll do is, whilst we're trying to set up the phone line, we should play the next track, which is, I think is appropriately called Absence Theme, which is from the soundtrack, the part where Morris is absent cottage, it says. Is that right? Should we play that one, or do you think we should play the longer one, which is Hugh Thoughtful Theme?
I think the longer one would give us time to establish phone contact
right.
with Hugh.
Okay. You might have to help me out again with this, because it's sort of, for some reason, I seem to be skipping tracks. I don't know why. It's nope.
There's this. It's a recurring motif that fades in. Something that is very drone based.
Right, but I'm not getting anything actually. Okay. Hello, Hugh.
Oh, hello.
Ah,
you didn't tell me this was going to go out to the whole world.
Oh, yes. Okay, so can you hear everything now? You can hear this background.
Look, they won't know my name, will they, or what?
No.
All right, then.
You can be called Alan Bridges if you like.
Oh, yeah, all right, Alan Bridges, yeah.
Yeah, which was the... you were, in fact, the first... my first Wavelength programme years ago in which you called yourself Alan Bridges.
Oh, well, I'm Alan Bridges again, then.
OK.
Hereafter.
Absolutely. Now, in the background, I've got Dan Wilson here. You remember Dan?
Oh, yes.
You talked to him about Perpetual Motion, and he did the sound for the film, which has now been finished.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
In the background, you can hear some of Dan's soundtrack. I'll just bring it up so you can listen to that for a minute.
OK.
And that's called a zitherscape.
Oh.
And that plays over a scene of you and Morris in his garden. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, God, you brought all that in, have you?
Yeah. There's some footage of you.
From the past.
Well, Morris is sitting in what looks like a bath chair.
Yeah.
And you're pushing it, trying to get it started. So, Dan, say hello to Hugh.
Hi, Hugh.
Hello. Oh, hello, Dan. How are you? All
good,
right.
Good. Nice to hear your voice again.
So,
sorry?
It's nice to hear your voice again, Hugh.
Oh, right. Hang on. I'll just put it on. Oh, no, it is on speakerphone. My hearing isn't too good, but it's all right. Go on. Yeah,
all
I
right.
can hear you.
Well, anyway, we've called specifically to hear your toilet poem.
Oh, right. Yes, that's what I gathered, yes.
Yeah. So we're ready when you are. Oh, why did you write a toilet poem?
Oh, it was just to fill in the time, you know, to the sort of odd moments.
No, but you had a story. I remember you telling me why there was a reason why you. There's something to do with somebody that visited you, and
I don't think I can remember.
Okay, well, just take it. Just go for the poem then.
Yeah. Well, I since you last phoned, I've written a final verse of three lines. I've combined the two earlier verses into one verse, and then there's this final three or four lines, which I've titled Finale.
Okay.
Mm.
All right.
So do you want me to start reciting it then, the whole lot?
Yes, please.
Yes, okay. Well, it's right. Right. The man from Didcot Parkway came to tea, and when he left, we knew that it was he who had been here to see us once before, for then he had a shit upon the floor. And now again, on Woodlook vinyl flooring, new stools are present, but not just used for sitting, for if in seats of stools, for sitters sitting, wide holes be formed, thus lending new usefulness for shitters shitting, there could be stools from stools descending. Finale. And now to close, with stools descending, let us now make here an ending.
Is that the end?
Yeah.
I thought there were three verses.
Well, as I said.
Okay. Well, we have to apologise retrospectively to anyone who might have been offended by the word. Dan, do you think you'd better concur with that? I think.
Well, I'm not a broadcaster, so I think it's your responsibility to. I apologise too.
We're all apologising profusely for any offence that this poem might have caused to the public at large.
I really enjoyed it, Hugh. By the way, there was a sad night that's. William has used a soundtrack of a record called Perpetual Motion or Perpetua Mobile by
Strauss.
Strauss.
Can you hear?
Oh yeah.
Can you hear it? It's. I'll turn it up. So that it's by Strauss, Hugh, and it's a piece of music called Perpetuum Mobile.
Oh right, yes, I had heard of it, but yeah. I don't think I'd actually listened to it. I did know there was something called that. Mm.
So how's it going?
Are you still on air?
Oh yes.
Oh right.
So,
okay.
so how?
Asking, which is totally irrelevant.
So how's it going with perpetual motion machine?
Right. Well, I've now got about 8 of the second stage of the project. And I've also thought of, believe it or not, and this was really very. This was very much of a sort of spin-off thing, but which I didn't think could be done. It hadn't occurred to me at all, but I realised that in using this particular mechanism in a different way, it was one of the various mechanisms of the sort of 8. It would give you, I think, and it only takes simple arithmetic to work it out, perpetual motion in a straight line. So you could have some. Now, what it would do is, if it would work, that is, let us suppose you'd had a cart, which would normally be pulled by a horse, right? Now, the actual wheels of a cart don't do the driving. The whole vehicle is pulled along by the horse, and the wheels just rotate, you see. So this would be a sort of a mechanism built into the chassis of the cart or the vehicle or whatever it is, or even an aircraft, possibly, or even a rocket. The thing would go in the direction in which it's being pointed, you see. Well, there we are. It would now you could also have it so that it be acted on by gravity would provide the actuating force. But it would be gravity in conjunction with something else in the main embodiments that I've thought of. I'm not going to say any more about it because I don't want to give anything away. That sound all right?
Yeah, I'll ask Dan what he thinks about this.
This would be the simplest thing to explain to somebody. I don't see how anybody could be wrong.
Dan's going to ask you something.
I can't really comment on this. I think it's a really interesting idea to use gravity as the motive force.
Yes.
Because it's there. It's omnipresent. It's there to be tapped into. And
I don't understand this at all. But other people do. But I mean, the general public sort of have got a vague idea of it. Einstein worked out in a sort of thought experiment that gravity is equal to inertia, or it's equivalent to it. I don't know if that's the same thing, equal to or equivalent to, but there's a correlation between the two. I think it involves sort of being in a lift or something, and the lift is going as fast as you would go if you were falling, you know. Yeah. So you're weightless, you see. I don't know, I don't understand it. But inertia, what one can say generally, in general, is that inertia can overcome inertia, which just means that a mass of matter, like, for example, an asteroid, could be pushed out of its orbit very gradually by reflecting light from the sun towards a spot on its surface, and particles of light, I believe, are they particles of matter? But anyway, if they are, and if they have inertia, well, they must have, otherwise this wouldn't work. That, over time, could make that asteroid, which might weigh several tons, it can deflect it from its orbital path, you see. That's all irrelevant, but that's just to give an illustration of inertia overcoming inertia.
Well, does this tie in with your analogy of the tug of war between two teams?
No, that's entirely different. That just refers to specifically to a piece of mechanism. I'll correct myself. Yes. Now, I don't want to get too close to to anybody, if this is still on air, understanding what that is. Yes, you've got to have that in order for this thing to work. At least I think you do. There is another idea that for a different version of this, perpetual motion in a straight line, where you feed back what would otherwise be contained. Now, you can contain a force. Let's suppose that you have a car on one side of a wall made of fixed steel plate going towards the wall, and there's another car going towards that with the steel plate between them, and they both crash into the steel plate at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, that may be a reasonably sufficiently good illustration of
William's looking incredulous. He looks. William doesn't. He seems.
I can't see. Where does that go, Hugh? I don't. Just apart from the wreckage of two cars, I don't.
The only damage that anything would do when it's brought suddenly to a halt, or a bullet or whatever, is that it suddenly stopped moving when it wants to carry on. So its inertia wants to keep it going. I think this is just
physics, you know. You're saying that if you have two forces of energy which coincide in one spot, that energy will somehow be deflected in...
It
would be absorbed by whatever is preventing it from doing what it would otherwise do.
Yes, but you can't. How can you possibly harness that? I mean, there's no way.
That's a secret, you see. That is the secret. And I'll give a tiny little bit. Am I still on air or what?
Yes.
I'll give a tiny little bit of a secret away. It might be possible to take into mechanical engineering what happens in civil engineering. Now, I'm not going to say what happens in one or the other, but one is concerned with something very specific. In fact, the stability prevent motion. Mechanical engineering is to do largely with bringing motion about, acceleration. Now, if you can make use of what is required in civil engineering, that is stasis, the maintenance of stasis, with acceleration, then it seems to me that you can get perpetual motion. And there are various ways of doing it. And in that Sir George Airy thing, on certain conditions under which motion is possible, I mean, there's a paper that the... the Astronomer Royal in the last century wrote?
Yeah, this is a very old, this is like 1820s.
That's something entirely different, William. I'll say at this stage that possibly the...
So hang on.
Any one of these mechanisms might be what was concealed from view within the rotating drum of the... wheel of Bessler's wheel, the wheel of Orpharis, as he called himself. Only one person was allowed to see inside, and that was the Elector of Hesse Cassel, who was his patron, and supported him and allowed him to exhibit under strict conditions his devices. Anyway, anybody can read about that in Gould's book Oddities. Commander Gould, who... was the man who...
he collected odd towels.
Odd it is.
Yeah.
It's by that retired World War One naval officer who went on to restore the Harrison over the Royal Naval College, I think it was. The Harrison... what are they called? Chronometers, you know. He spent years doing it, and he went on in later years to onto the BBC, the Brains Trust. He wrote books and so on. And one book he wrote was about things that nobody's ever gotten to the bottom of, and that was called Oddities. And in that book, there's the best account in English of the Wheel of Osiris. There's a very interesting, much more recent account, I mean, in just the last couple of years or so, by Professor Simon Schaffer, who in, you can read it on the internet, who in a telephone interview with somebody, in a telephone interview, he talked about that, and it's clear that he's given it a lot of thought, and he's sort of hedging his bets. He doesn't say that it definitely wouldn't have worked, because it couldn't have done, because it's against the laws of physics. He probably thinks that, but he was sort of hedging his bets, and anyway, I mean, anybody who wants to read that can.
Yeah.
If it's still on the net and there to be read, you know.
Yeah. Archive.org is a good place to read old books.
Sorry?
If you go to archive.org and type in Gould, G-O-U-L-D.
Oh, yes.
Any listeners would be able to look for oddities,
right,
and have a read. Hugh, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
William has often tried to persuade you to show more of your diagrams, which are really that they're like proper draftsmanship.
Well, they're rather rough and ready, but anyway, yes, they're approximate to that. Yes.
Well, they've got an artistic beauty to them. They're really fascinating things. I think Williams even wants to use one of them as the poster for the film.
Good grief.
I don't know if that's allowed or not. But
I'm going to be world famous. Am I still on air?
Yes.
And you should, I think it might be a good direction to publish a work of your illustrations, but William tells me that you're not that artistically inclined to view it as art itself per se. It's not Perpetual Motion itself has a history of artists working within the concept of perpetual motion.
Yes.
And you could follow in the footsteps and trounce them, I think, and rather right, blow them out the water, I think, because some of them...
Oh, well, all right then, yes.
Well, there we are. So you've got an offer there from Dan, who's going to publish your book of diagrams.
No, I'm not a publisher. William's the publisher.
I'm not a publisher.
You are a publisher.
Not a book publisher.
Okay, you're a book man.
Well, perhaps there's a publisher out there who might be interested. Okay. But Hugh, you're still trying to get help with this, aren't you?
I haven't. Yes, I am, yes.
Well, now's your chance to make a quick appeal.
I see. All right. Well, if there's anybody out there who's the ideal person who could help me would be a student member of the Whitworth Society. I've more or less given up on the Institute of Mechanical Engineers because over the last several years I've been to various universities and spoken to lecturers, and presumably at least some of them were members of the Institute of Mechanical Engineers. And the thing is, and I went to one place not far from London, I won't mention its name, where I was led to believe that I could get help from the department if I enrolled as a student to do a master's degree using as the material to be studied, my subject. And I went along for an interview. I got a little bit of funding from the local authority, and I went into the room for this formal interview with this particular lecturer.
Yes, but Hugh, you better get on with the appeal.
And he said, he came, walked towards me, got up from behind the desk that he was sitting together with a colleague, walked towards me and said, "You can't come here to work on a perpetual motion idea." And I immediately said to him, but we don't need to call it that. We could call it a dynamometer. Dynamometers are extremely boring devices. Most people have never heard of them. It's just using in engine testing plants and what have you to test the power output. But, any electric motor could be used as a dynamometer, presumably. If it's supposed to go around clockwise, say, and you turn it anti-clockwise. Sorry, I'll get back to it. Yes, a mechanical engineering student doing a master's degree, ideally, it doesn't have to be a student who's sponsored by the Whitworth Society, but a Whitworth Society student will be somebody who presumably, if he's done an apprenticeship in the traditional way, which he may not have done, but a traditional mechanical engineering apprentice has to do bench work where he uses hand tools, machine tools.
But what do you want them to do?
Metal.
What do you want them to do exactly?
Well, I want such a person who will have a very good degree of mechanical mindedness, which he or she will have developed. To simply analyse my ideas, that they can all be analysed mathematically. They are not nonsense. They are they would either work, or that they wouldn't work, or that they might work if the designs were to be changed. It's that simple. And I'd be prepared to pay the person, say, £15 an hour. The person might even get more money from me if he or she has to travel some distance. I'd actually prefer a female student, because in order to get to university, they've probably had to overcome quite a lot of prejudice and, oh, no, don't do this, you know, be a secretary or something like that. But she's persisted, and she's got a natural flair. Now, as somebody with a natural flair for designing machinery, who's interested in machinery, likes to fix machinery, possibly who is at a university where they have a club for racing cars, you know, and the person works on the, you know, all that kind of thing. Somebody who's...
Hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Was I cut off just then?
No, you're still there.
Well, that's the end of it, William, more or less. I mean, the person can... I don't mind you giving out you know, my phone number.
Well, no, they can get in touch with me.
Yes.
So you're looking for someone who might be able to... You'll pay somebody to assist you to try and bring your project into some kind of...
First of all, to see if it would work. If it would work, it could be demonstrated on paper.
Yeah.
All I'm doing is using ordinary mechanical devices in a new way. Did they hear that?
Yes.
Oh, good, right. This could have been invented by the ancient Romans, if they'd known. And as for the thing that is supposed to go up in the air like a rocket, well, if they tried to do that, when they got into the upper atmosphere, they would have... they presumably wouldn't have had at the same time all the technology to support people in space, you know. Anyway, no, I'm being serious. Look, with climate change and all this sort of thing, the world has got a serious energy problem. How to generate energy without putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, but not only that, how to refill these huge aquifers in various parts of the world, like the Ogallala Aquifer, if that's how it's pronounced, in America, which straddles several states, which are emptying. They're having to cut back on growing crops, not only in America, in Saudi Arabia, other parts of the world. This could desalinate water at a tremendous rate. And the thing is, if you were to use centrifugal force, if whoever's listening to this accepts that you can talk meaningfully about such a thing, in fact, just the force of tension... That's all you need to consider.
I think Dan wants to ask you something, Hugh.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I was wondering if you've had any previous students or people helping you, because I thought you mentioned once...
I have had, yes. I did have a person who was very helpful several years ago. I think he was a graduate, and he certainly was at least at A-level... I didn't ever ask him, even though I was working with him. I used to go and see him once an evening over 6 weeks.
Yeah.
He did a mathematical analysis of the device that I had thought of then, which wasn't complete, but we assumed that if the little bits were filled in, and since then I've sort of worked it all out in my head. That is what I showed you, Dan, the drawings of.
Yeah, I remember.
That was from several years ago, but I've moved on from then now, you see.
Okay.
I'm not going to say what it was, but it was like an it had the characteristics of any mechanical device. I'll say no more than that, because otherwise it's giving too much away. But my recent ideas are completely different.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say any more about that. Okay. Because you can so easily give away essential things in just a few words, a couple of sentences. Yeah. And I've been spending 20 years on this. I've been chain smoking for years, racking my brains in the middle of the night and in the early hours trying to work out. And the thing is, if any of these things are any good, if they would work, people will say, well, why did it take until now for anybody to invent this?
Yeah.
Because it will be so simple. Because all machines basically are quite simple devices.
Or
assemblies of simple devices.
Do you subscribe to any of the conspiracy theories that free energy has been successfully perfected at some point in the past by various people that have been silenced for various reasons?
Well, we don't know that they have, and there's an extremely good book. It's very well written. It's by somebody who's been sort of sidelined, Rupert Sheldrake.
Oh, yeah.
I've got this book in front of me. I just picked it up, called The Science Delusion. I remember buying this years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, and he says in it, he reviews all the sort of dogmas, I don't think he says that these dogmas are wrong, but that scientists can't get beyond them. Anybody who tries to challenge them will say, well, it's not quite that, you know, you've got to sort of look differently or whatever, and that's largely the truth, but it's not everything.
Yeah.
And they lose their jobs, you know, or they don't get their careers are sort of brought to a halt or something, and they're sort of because they're heretics, you see, as far as the ordinary establishment are concerned. But anyway, this Rupert Sheldrake has proved that he's a good scientist. And he says, I can't find it, there's no time to find it here, but in one or two sentences, I think in the section or the chapter on energy and power or whatever, as well, have any of these people who say that they've invented perpetual motion machines got any? Can you go anywhere and see one working?
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't with me, but I have worked out, as you've seen, various partially working mechanisms that show direction of force. There are various directions of force that act within the mechanism, you see. And that is because you've got to use your imagination, but that's not very difficult, because everything else is really very simple.
Well, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and that was Hugh de la Cruz on the line, live telephone link-up, and Dan Wilson, the composer of the soundtrack to It's My Own Invention, a film about Hugh and perpetual motion. Dan, anything to wind up? We've still got Hugh on the line, if necessary.
Well, it's a difficult thing to balance the intricacy of Hugh's ideas there's a kind of Hugh mentioned the word disingenuousness all the time, and it's a difficult thing to separate that from the rustic nuts and bolts of the.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.